This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
This month in the news, the youngest young stellar objects, stellar sibling rivalries, and planets go missing. For over 50 years, we have understood that the vast stellar seas of gas and dust, known as molecular clouds, are the birth chambers of stars. The process of producing a star requires that the molecular cloud is large enough to foster cold cores of gas and dust that reach temperatures of just tens of Kelvin. Then, with the help of a pressure front, such as could be produced by a supernova explosion, the material within the cold core can begin to collapse into a small dense envelope of dust containing the first moments of a new star, a protostar, which is encircled by a rotating disk which feeds material from the envelope onto the star's surface. At this point, the star is known as a young stellar object, and will remain in this state for another 100 million years before it throws off its blanket of surrounding dust by igniting its fusion core and ascending out to share its place among its older brethren. Young stellar objects are broken into four classifications, 0, 1, 2, and 3, where 0 is the youngest and 3 is the oldest. When observing young stellar objects, the majority are noted as being either class 2 or class 3, as this is both where the young stellar objects are brightest and spend the majority of their lifetimes. Some point between class 2 and class 3 that nuclear fusion occurs. Before nuclear fusion, the protostar is just a highly dense ball of ionized gas heated by gravitational collapse, which glows brightly in the infrared part of the spectrum. The earliest stage, class 0, is the poorest understood period of the young stellar object's life, but it is while in this stage that important physics describing the transition from the free gas in the molecular cloud into a fully defined young stellar object occurs. Until recently, however, no telescope has been able to study a class 0 young stellar object for reasons exactly opposite of that mentioned previously. The protostar is both extremely dim, since it is trapped within a thick veil of dust, and spends less than 10,000 years in this state. However, thanks to a new generation of infrared telescopes, such as SMA and KARMA, a team has managed to measure the accretion disk around a class 0 young stellar object called L1527. By using Kepler's laws with measurements of the protostar's rotating disk, the researchers have determined that L1527 is only a fifth of the mass of a cloud of dust that surrounds it. This ratio is directly related to the age of the young stellar object, as low numbers mean that there has not been much time for the dust and gas to fall onto the protostar. Critically, L1527 agrees with the expectations made of class 0 young stellar objects, and therefore, as far as can be seen, is well on its way to hosting its own solar system in the future. Binary star systems account for about half of all the star systems in the Milky Way. For the majority of binary stars, they form like their single star cousins, enclosed within an envelope of gas and dust, but with the small difference that binary stars share their primordial cloud with others. However, a certain subset of binary stars, known as wide binary stars, offer up a problem to this simple idea, because the stellar pair is separated by such a vast distance of the order of hundreds of times the diameter of the solar system, such that there is simply no way they could have formed together in a single cloud. The current model for how wide binaries form assumes that it occurs at the time after the host star cluster has dispersed, at which point the environment becomes calm enough that the two distant stars are able to form a tenuous gravitational bond. A new theory proposed by Ruperth and McCullough suggests a completely different process which they have determined using computer simulations of star clusters. Their model requires a slight modification to the expectations of a wide binary star system in that it is in fact three stars disguised as two. Initially, the assumption is that the three stars form in close proximity within a star cluster, all three tightly bound to each other, providing them with the necessary security to escape the turbulent conditions they were born into. Then, slowly, over the course of millions of years, two of the sibling stars begin to form a closer bond and spiral into an ever tighter orbit around each other, while simultaneously pushing the third star away. What the model hinges upon, though, is that all the wide binary star systems are in fact three-body star systems, which at the moment is not supported by observation. However, telescopes currently would only be able to distinguish two closely orbiting stars if they are very near to us, and this is further complicated because the model predicts that the two close stars may even merge into one. Although this means that the model certainly needs more time to be tested, it is worth noting that the nearest neighbours to the Sun, Alpha Centauri A, B, and the closest, Proxima Centauri, are all part of a single-body, wide binary star system, perhaps supporting the model. Finally, researchers using Haute-Provence Observatory have made follow-up observations of some of the brightest confirmed Jupiter-like planets detected by the Kepler satellite. The team measured the wobble of the stars caused by the orbit of a nearby planet, and therefore could make an independent measurement of the confirmed planets using a different technique to Kepler's light curve method. Unfortunately, rather than confirm Kepler's findings, the follow-up measurements actually found 35% of the planets were simply false positives caused by other effects. Although Kepler was expected to have some false positive detections, the previous estimate before Kepler's launch was a mere 5%. What makes this important is not so much that now the number of confirmed planets will go down, but that it indicates that the understanding of what causes the false positives is poor. The method Kepler uses to detect planets is to observe a star over a period of time, and if a planet transits across the disk of the star, Kepler will measure a decrease in the star's brightness. What caused the false positives is that there are situations which can cause a star's brightness to decrease even if a planet is not involved. The three main culprits are: a small companion failed star known as a brown dwarf is transiting instead of a planet. Alternatively, a much larger star is orbited by a small sun-like star and brown dwarf binary system, which can cause planet-like dips in the light curve. A final possibility could be that Kepler is observing a very tight binary star system, where the plane of the orbit is tilted so that the two stars slightly overlap each other as one passes in front of the other. Fortunately, it is possible to correct for these problems, and already new models are estimating false positive percentages closer to the observed 35%. However, it is perhaps slightly concerning that the problem only became apparent after ground-based follow-up observations, because this sort of work is both expensive and limited to only a small number of stars observed by the Kepler satellite.